Welcome to the Metabolic MD. Health means everything. We all seek optimal health, but most of us do not know how to achieve it. Dr. Paul Kaladzic has spent a career in the emergency department. Now, he helps his patients avoid ever ending up there. During these podcasts, you'll learn how you can lose weight and prevent and reverse disease through new technology, a modified diet, and the use of some new recently approved FDA medications. This information is not meant to be medical advice. Please seek consultation from your own medical provider. Let's listen in.
Well, guess what? We're back with another fun-filled episode of the Metabolic MD with Dr. Paul Kaladzic. He is the Metabolic MD, and I'm going to put him to work today, folks. You know why? I got my blood results back, and there's all kinds of things that I have no clue what they mean. And because he's walked through my door, I'm going to put him to work telling me what I got to worry about. So this is what you do every single day, don't you, with your practice. You actually go through blood work. You try to figure out what's going on with people. And these results help you figure that out, right?
Right. When we do an initial evaluation with patients, we do an intake process. And it's a complete metabolic health evaluation. Of course, most patients that come to me, they're overweight or they have some metabolic health problem like prediabetes or hypertension or high cholesterol. So part of that whole process is to evaluate their numbers. And just like we're going to do today, Terry, we talk through these numbers so people really understand the implications of their lab work. And sometimes it's great news. You know, this looks good.
Yeah.
Other times there's things that we identify that we have to roll up our sleeves and work on.
Okay. So not only are we going to get to hear your wisdom on this, we're going to get to hear your bedside manner, because when you see stuff on my results that aren't great, let's see how you handle that telling me.
Okay, so I'm on the spot here, huh?
Correct.
But just so you know, I do a little bit of this when I do my no-cost consults with patients. You know, I'll do 15 or 20 minutes on the phone with people, and we'll talk a little bit about their history. And so they get an idea as to how we work and really how we can put a program together for them.
All right, so for those folks like me who go to the doctor every year or every 6 months and get blood work done, and they send you the results, or you get on your My Chart page and you see the results and it says normal or out of range, I never know what any of those things mean. I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I'll be the first to admit it. So maybe you can help us, the rest of us humans out here, understand what the heck these things mean.
Sure. I mean, it's just that people don't have the background. It's actually not that complicated. There are certain things you need to focus on, other things that really are kind of secondary. So let's go through that.
All right. So the first up on my list is something called ALT. What is that?
Okay, so you know, AST, ALT, and there's a third one, which may be in here, called ALK-FOS. Those are liver enzymes. And the SGOT and the SGPT are just like the old terms, like way back when I was in medical school, they were called those. So they changed the name. So AST and ALT are liver enzymes. So if you have inflammation of the liver or a liver problem, then those may be elevated. So, you know, if you were, you know, used a fair amount of alcohol in the past, those may be elevated. The biggest reason we see those elevated today is for a problem called fatty liver disease, which we've talked about on this program. So if your liver is infiltrated with fat, and fatty liver disease is a misnomer. Fatty liver disease doesn't come from eating too much fat. It comes from eating too many carbs that increase your blood sugar, and then that blood sugar goes to the liver and gets converted to fat. Most of that fat gets deposited around the midsection, but some of it stays in the liver, causing fatty liver disease. So in my metabolic health evaluations, these numbers, the AST, ALT, and there's another one called ALK-FOS, we focus on those primarily for the presence of fatty liver disease.
All right. So by looking at my results, you would say I do not have fatty liver disease.
You do not have fatty liver disease.
Isn't that exciting? I've passed the fatty liver test. All right, now we're going into something called basic metabolic panel. Because you're the metabolic MD, this is right down your alley, correct?
It is.
Okay,
right.
So you ready to go here?
Yeah.
As you can see, my glucose was high. That was supposed to be a fasting, but I didn't do fasting because I'm a diabetic, and it doesn't make sense anymore because I can't I have to eat something.
Because you're taking supplemental insulin. Yeah. So correct. You're going to get less numbers. But let's talk about that. Fasting blood glucose is important. If you're under 100, you're in the normal range. I actually like to see those in the 80s or so, because once you're in the 90s, you're developing a little bit of insulin resistance, and that means you're at risk for eventual prediabetes. So that's blood glucose. If you're over 125, that's a diabetic range. Of course, I like a more meticulous testing of this, something we'll get to later, called a fasting insulin level. And of course, I use the 24/7 glucose readings, the continuous glucose monitors my patients, where we can really drill down so people can understand their glucose physiology and how their diet affects it.
And that's why I don't worry too much about that number when I see it on there, because I know I got my meter. I can check myself. I know where I'm at.
Yeah, because you're diabetic, you got your CGM on, and you know what your glucose physiology is 24/7. And I always use a continuous glucose monitor in my initial evaluation of patients. You know, in the book... Yeah, you know, the book on Amazon, which is The Continuous Glucose Monitor Revolution for Non-Diabetics, I talk about how that can be life-changing in the last chapter. And in fact, just looking at that data and seeing what's going on with your blood glucose 24/7 can be enlightening to people. And people, once people see those spikes and, you know, what's happening with their spikes and drops and why it causes fatigue and why it may be zapping their energy and why it may be causing some brain fog, then people get it. So glucose numbers are very important.
All right, so let's go underneath it. Creatine SER.
Okay, so creatine, this SER, just you're going to see that a lot. It stands for serum. Okay, it just means it's from your blood. Creatine and BUN are measures of kidney function. Okay, so kidney function basically is, you know, very important. Long-term, as you know, people that have persistently high blood glucose can have vascular inflammation.
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, high glucose is a much more important reason for blood vessel problems in this country than high cholesterol is. And you can see, Terry, if I can mention, your number's a little bit high there.
It is.
So that means your many years of diabetes may have affected to some degree. It's not terrible.
Right.
But it may have affected your kidney function. And I don't want to pretend bad things for you, but that's why some diabetics over long periods of time end up having kidney problems, even require dialysis,
right?
Because their numbers are high. Now, yours is 1.5. Usually people need to get into the threes or fours before the handwriting's on the wall in terms of potentially needing dialysis. So even though yours is a little bit high, there's nothing eminent there.
Yeah, he suggested something like an ACE or ARB, but we won't get into that right now, but that's something that might be
medications can help that. And then the BUN is also a measure of kidney function, but it has more to do with what's called pre-renal, which that means the blood that's flowing into the kidneys. And so that has a lot more to do with hydration status. So your BUN is normal, but BUN and creatinine are a function of kidney function. And then those numbers are used to figure out a GFR, which is your next number. GFR stands for glomerular filtration rate. And that is kind of an absolute number. And you want that to be high, because the higher it is, the more optimal your kidneys are working. You generally want it to be in the 60s, 70s, 80s or so. And you can see yours is a little bit low.
Now, so. would I be better? Because I don't drink that much water. Should I be piping some water in?
Keeping yourself hydrated so that you can keep that blood flowing into the kidneys is always a great idea.
I think water would flush things out. Is that true? It kind of flushes stuff?
Okay. Maintaining hydration is great. But that GFR number is an important, and it's a measure of overall kidney function. When I'm in the emergency department, we always check GFRs before we get patients dye for radiographic studies, because if the GFR is low, then the dye can damage the kidneys. So,
that's interesting. Yeah, so we learned something. That's good.
Yeah, your number here would be fine for that. So again, a a little bit lower than you want to see it, but not horrendous.
All right, let's go to sodium, because I love salt.
Yeah, I'm just going to go through these four blood chemicals together. Sodium, potassium, chloride, and carbon dioxide. Those are just the chemicals that are in your blood. In most people, they're going to be in the normal range unless there's something significantly going on. So part of your basic metabolic profile is the chemicals in the blood, sodium, chloride, potassium, carbon dioxide. You know, those are normal for you. They're normal in most people. That's usually information that we don't see much that we need to act on.
All right. And calcium?
Calcium is just a measure, you know, of your bone health. So you certainly want your calcium in the normal range. This is going to get into another discussion. I don't think you had it done, but the discussion of vitamin D. So you want your calcium to be in the normal range. If it's low, you should be taking some supplemental calcium, especially important in women because of the risk of osteoporosis, but actually in all of us as we age, because we want to keep those bones strong. So, you know, if we have a fall or an injury, we don't end up with a
fracture. What's a good source of calcium? Milk?
Yeah, milk is a good source of calcium, or, you know, calcium supplement. You know,
okay.
Just take a calcium
supplement.
The things
you see on TV, calcium. Yeah.
Okay. But let's talk about vitamin D here as well.
Sure.
And I don't think you had a vitamin D test.
I feel neglected now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you know, it might be done periodically, maybe not just in this set of labs that you had.
All right.
But vitamin D is important for any of my patients that have low vitamin D. I suggest a vitamin D supplement. I take one every day. So calcium and vitamin D kind of go together. And the other thing that matters with that is getting a little sunlight. You know, in the last 40 years, we've talked about, oh, you got to stay out of the sun. You got to use sunscreen. And yeah, you need to be considerate of that. But you got to get a little bit of sunshine in association with vitamin D and calcium to keep those bones strong.
All right. So let's go to the next page, which is CBC. I have no idea what CBC means, but it's a bunch of numbers there that I have no clue what they are.
So we don't need to get into too much detail. This is one of those tests that has 15 numbers on it.
Yep.
And really, there's only a few that matter.
All right, tell me the ones that matter.
So a CBC is a complete blood count. Okay, so CBC, complete blood count.
Yep.
The most important measurements there are white blood cells. White blood cells are your response to fight infection. Yours are in the normal range, so you're doing good. If you have an infection, those can be high, or with certain medical problems like leukemia, which is an excess number of white blood cells, those can be high. RBC is just RBC. Well, RBC, hemoglobin, and hematocrit, the next three tests, are just a measure of potential anemia. So these have to do with your red blood cells, and we'll let you know if you're anemic or not.
That's what people see when they're like my wife, they put her on iron because she was anemic. So
it would be those numbers that they're following. And then these additional numbers, the MCV, MCH, et cetera, those are just the size of the red cells and how much hemoglobin they have in them. So those are less important. The big numbers to focus on there are the white blood cell count, WBC, RBC, hemoglobin, and hematocrit. And so these other ones really are not that important. The platelet count you have here is a measure of the stickiness of your blood. You want, of course, if you have a cut or a laceration, you want your blood to clot at some point.
But I'm on blood thinners. Would that reflect the fact that I'm on blood
thinners? Not necessarily directly in the platelet count. No, there are other tests that would reflect that and may be monitored when people are on blood thinners. But the platelet count, you just want to make sure is in a reasonable range. And then all these other numbers here, neutrophils, monocyte, lymphocytes, eosinophils, basophils, it kind of goes on and on, it's called a differential of white blood cells. So if you look at that WBC count up top, all these things down below, the neutrophils, the basophils, the eosinophils are all different types of white blood cell counts. And unless they're really off, you don't have to pay a lot of attention to those.
All right. So it's just a way of scaring us, just giving us some fancy numbers that we don't know what they are. And they
scare except
us.
Fortunately, yours are by and large in the normal range.
Look at me. I'm normal with people.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, Terry.
All right. Let's go to the dreaded hemoglobin A1C.
Yeah, so A1C is this is an important number, and unfortunately in you it's a little bit high.
It's high,
diabetic. It's 7.9. You and I should talk about your low carb diet.
I'm really trying.
Looks like it needs to be a little bit more low carb. You know, this is not bad. I see patients that have a hemoglobin A1C of 11 and 12.
Okay.
But this is what a hemoglobin A1C, it's literally a percentage. So 7.9 for you is 7.9%. And it is the amount of hemoglobin in your red blood cells that has glucose attached to it. So your number's a little bit high because the glucose in your blood is a little bit high on average in comparison to a normal person. This is an important test. Red blood cells live for 90 days, so the hemoglobin A1C always reflects the amount of hemoglobin you've had in your blood over the last 90 days. So red cells turn over, they get taken out by the spleen after 90 days. New ones are produced in the bone marrow, get kicked out of the bone marrow. So red blood cells live for 90 days, and the amount of glucose attached to those red blood cells is what a hemoglobin A1C is. And this is an important concept because blood glucose attaches to your hemoglobin just like it attaches to other things in your body. So again, I believe that high blood sugar is a reason for vascular inflammation for the majority of middle-aged and older Americans that have any kind of vascular problem. By vascular, I mean heart attack, stroke, kidney failure, peripheral vascular disease, any clogging of the artery
type of disease. And I've had two stints put in, but that was 10 years ago, and I go every 6 months.
Yeah, so you get checked out.
But that's probably why that happened.
But the point is that your blood sugar's high, it attaches to your hemoglobin, but it's also attaching, if it's high, to the lining of your lining of your arteries. And it's attaching to your joints, causing joint inflammation and pain. When I get patients' hemoglobin A1C's down, and they come in complaining of being overweight and having knee pain, even if they haven't lost a lot of weight yet, when we get that blood sugar under control, the inflammation in their joints improves and their amount of pain goes down and their mobility increases. But just remember, hemoglobin A1C is a reflection of the amount of glucose floating around in your system, and it's not only attaching to your hemoglobin molecules, it's attaching to your blood vessel linings, and it's attaching to your joints, and it's causing inflammation in other areas. That's why I think blood sugar control, you know, moderate blood sugar, even low normal blood sugar is helpful. And of course, if you can reach those low blood sugar numbers, that's also when your body organs start burning fat instead of blood sugar, and that can help with weight loss as well.
So what irritates me about this, and I get irritated easily, is so if I have spikes in blood sugar where it goes high,
yeah,
right, but I also have low blood sugar where it goes low.
Yeah.
I think they should average it out somehow.
Well, the hemoglobin A1C does average it out.
I think it's just measuring how high it was at one point.
No.
If I have low blood sugar, is that kind of counteracting the...
Yeah. If you didn't have periods of lower blood sugar, this number would be higher. So, you know, I'm not your doc, Terry, but
that's his disclaimer.
But your doc would probably say to you, we need to get a little bit tighter control of your blood sugar.
Yeah.
See if we can get that number down into the sixes.
And I will tell you that it seems like during the summertime, those numbers come down for me. It's because you're outside active, and inside in the wintertime, you're not as active. So it's...
Look at that, Terry. Diet and exercise. Man.
It just comes down to that.
Who'd think of that?
Who needs a damn doctor anyway?
Yeah. And again, since we're talking about exercise, again, strength training is the way to go, because when your body is got bigger muscle mass, you're soaking up more insulin, you're soaking up more glucose, and you're moderating those numbers.
Right. I agree. The exercise is the key.
Right.
Okay. We're now to lipid panel. Lipid panel is what?
Cholesterol. Everybody knows cholesterol is evil, which, you know, I'm saying that in jest, because here you are, Terry, with normal lipid profiles, But you say you've had stents in your heart, right?
Correct. But after that, they did put me on cholesterol medicine.
Okay. All right.
I am on cholesterol medicine.
Well, again, for most of my patients, I think for you, the blood sugar numbers and the potential vascular inflammation, blood vessel inflammation from high blood sugar is more important than cholesterol. So you got total cholesterol here in the normal range. You've got triglycerides in the normal range. Now, interesting fact, low carb, high fat diets lower triglycerides. Okay. And why is that? That makes sense. That's not intuitive, but this is why. Because triglycerides are formed from the conversion of blood glucose to fat in the liver. That's where that fatty liver comes from that we talked about earlier. So triglycerides are formed from the conversion of blood glucose to fat in the liver. If you lower your blood glucose, you've got less fuel. You know, there's less substrate there to be converted to triglycerides. I see this all the time in my practice. I put patients on a low-carb diet, and their triglycerides plummet. I've had patients that have had triglycerides that go from 240 to 60 when they're put on a low-carb high fat diet.
So they could be eating pork chops all day long.
And
you would think triglycerides would go up.
And they don't. Now, you know, if you're eating a lot of fat and you're eating a lot of carbs, then your triglycerides can go up. But, you know, with my patients, you know, the three legs of the stool are low carb diet, intermittent fasting, and strength training. And I see their triglycerides go down.
So I never get this right. LDL's good. HDL is bad. Which one is it?
So LDL and VLDL are bad, but they're really just a submeasure of the total cholesterol. The good cholesterol is HDL, and I don't see that here.
Right here.
Oh, there it is. Sorry, 44. So yours is low normal, so you would want that higher. Often when I put patients on low-carb, high-fat diets, I see the HDL go up. Generally, what I see is the cholesterol might change a little bit, might go up, might go down a little bit. And the HDL usually gets better, again, because you're eating a little bit more fat. The other way to raise the HDL is exercise, both cardiovascular exercise and strength training. But HDL is the good cholesterol, and you want it higher. And then this hasn't been done here, but I think it's important, and I have it done in a lot of my patients. If your cholesterol is high, let's say your cholesterol's 260.
Right.
Everybody goes, oh, that's terrible. You need to be on a statin. Well, there are different cholesterol, bad cholesterol subcomponents. So that LDL is a subcomponent of cholesterol. And LDL can be further broken down into different types of subunits. And some of those subunits can cause problems, but some of them don't. So if your LDL subfractions are actually the better type, if you have a high cholesterol, it might not matter that much. So I'm an advocate, and I got a friend doc that is a lipid specialist. We're going to do a podcast with him here in a few weeks where lipid subfractions are important. So if your cholesterol is high, I would talk to your doc about, hey, can I get my LP little a done? Okay, which is one of those subfractions. Can I get my ApoB done, which is some of those subfractions. These are all generally genetically based. I don't want to get too complicated about it other than to say, if your cholesterol is high, then before you jump to being on a statin, you ought to at least have a conversation about, should I have my subfractions measured? And the subfractions things you want to look at are mostly a test called LP little a and a test called ApoB.
Well, maybe on a future podcast, we'll talk about statins and joint pain, and maybe getting on a low-carb diet would get you off statins, reducing the joint pain.
Yeah.
All right. I think, did I come to the end of my, no, I got one more, a PSA test.
So PSA is prostate-specific antigen. It's a test for males.
Yep.
And it rises in, it's a screen for prostate cancer, which is one of the most common cancers.
Correct.
Yours is in the normal range. If you follow a PSA over a period of time and it's not rising, that's a good thing. Because there's actually something, there you go, there's your graph. There's actually something, not only is the absolute PSA significant, because you can get a little bit of elevation with just having an increased prostate size.
And that happens to all guys that get
benign prostate. Yeah. issues. But PSA acceleration, which is the change in PSA, can be important as well. So if your PSA is not, you know, rapidly getting higher, if it's in a low range or it's not rapidly getting higher, then that means you're pretty safe. But most males should be having this test at least yearly. Prostate is a slow growing type of cancer. So, you know, if you get it done every 6 months or every year, you'll get a good handle on whether you might have a prostate problem.
Is this taking the place of the old finger up the rear end? Or
it actually has. Well, it's not done a lot anymore, to tell you the truth.
Nobody likes it. Not even the doctors, though.
I mean, in the emergency department, sometimes we have to do that. Somebody says, oh, I have blood in my stool, or I've got pain down there. Got to make sure there's not something going on. But by and large, for routine medical exams, the PSA is kind of replaced the rectal exam.
All right. So you had mentioned a few tests that people should get that I didn't get. What are those tests?
These are not absolutes, but there are other numbers that I often have patients pursue in my practice. Okay. So one of these is a body fat percentage. Okay. That can be done with a test called a DEXA scan. Okay, which is a low radiation test.
Yeah.
Or actually, it can be done with a more complicated bioimpedance device. So if you get a scale and it measures your body fat percentage, a lot of times because you've only got those contact points on your feet, it's not a real accurate reading. But there are more detailed impedance devices where you can find them in fitness clubs, sometimes find them at the doctor's office, where you actually hold on to them as they have handles. You hold on to them as well as have your feet on them. And that can give you a body fat percentage. And a body fat percentage can be very helpful in following my patient's progress as we try to reduce their amount of fat, especially visceral fat around the middle. So another test to consider, you can end up getting this on your own or at a health club or ask your doctor where you can go for it. Getting a DEXA scan, which is low radiation test to calculate your body fat percentage, or an InBody, InBody, which is one of these bioimpedance, low electrical, flow through the body, helps you figure out your body fat percentage. So I think that can be a very useful test for people. And I have a number of my patients go ahead and get that as well.
Yeah, so impedance for those folks, engineer guy.
Impedance is resistance.
How much electric current gets through your body. And
And it's different based on the amount of fat you have in the body. And that's why those impedance resistant devices, the InBodies, can be effective in measuring your body fat percentage, or it can be done with just a very low dose radiation test called a DEXA scan.
Okay, so somebody sees me, they might say, hey, you're a very high impedance guy. Talking about my middle, say I am not overweight, folks, for those who know that, but he might consider me slightly overweight, I guess.
Slightly overweight. So, the old thing with BMI, most people that have high BMI end up having more fat than they should. But, people that do heavy weightlifting, have a big body mass index, can have a high BMI as well. So that can be a little bit misleading because they have a high BMI because they have high body muscles and not necessarily high body fat.
All right. So anything else we should be?
There's one more I wanted to mention. And that is the cardiac CT scanning.
Cardiac CT, a CAT scan.
It's a low radiation CAT scan through the heart. Okay. And I get one myself every 7 to 10 years or so.
Yeah. I get a stress test and I get that done.
Get a stress test done. Yeah. So the name of this test is a calcium scoring CAT scan. So if you want to jot that down, if you haven't had one, if you're in your, if you're in your 50s or 60s, if you have heart disease that runs in your family, then a calcium scoring CAT scan measures the amount of calcification of your coronary arteries. Your coronary arteries are the arteries in your heart. And the amount of calcium in those arteries is a proxy for, gives you an estimate of the amount of plaque that's in those arteries,
right?
Because plaque then over a period of time calcifies. Now, it's not 100% accurate test in terms of, if you have a good score, it doesn't 100% mean you can't have plaque, because you can have soft plaque that has not calcified yet.
Right.
But for people like I do, that have heart disease in my family, to follow these numbers along, not every year, but you know, every 5, 7, or 10 years, it can give you an idea of your risk of cardiac disease. And the scoring here goes from 0 to over 400. So I'm going to just give you my own experience.
Are you bragging? Is this going to be a bragging thing?
No, because I have a little bit of disease. I have heart disease in my family.
I need to go. I bet in this my chart thing I can find my chart. But keep going.
If you've had it. So I had one when I was in my 40s. I had 0 calcium.
You know,
good news. My dad had a bypass, heart bypass, when he was in his 50s. And then I had one in my early 50s, and I had a little bit of calcium, but the score was low. It was around 7 or so. And then I had one again just in the last year or two, and that number jumped from 5 to 15. So 15's high. It means I got some plaque there.
15's high when it goes to 400?
Well, it's high, but I viewed 15 as a good score because, again, we're looking at that delta. Delta means change.
Okay.
You know, so over 7 years, I went from 5 to 15. That's progression, you know, but it's not bad. Now, if I would have gone to 5 to 170, then I would have been much more worried about it. But I went from 5 to 15, so that means, I got this risk as I get older, but it's probably not real bad. And also, I'm going to make a plug again for what I believe is the best metabolic health program.
I was going to say.
Which is low carb, because I've been on a low carb, high fat diet.
For how long?
For, 8 to 9 years now. And I've had minimal progression related to that. So I think the issue for me, and I will mention in conjunction with, we haven't talked about it, fasting insulin level. At one time had more insulin resistance than I have now on my low carb diet. And I think for me, for example, what's a bigger issue than cholesterol, even though I have high cholesterol that runs in my family and my cholesterol has been a little bit high, is keeping my blood sugar under control. So a calcium scoring CT can help keep allow you to continue to measure your amount of vascular inflammation and potential plaque. And then what you're balancing there is the insulin resistance issue, high blood glucose versus cholesterol. And again, for the majority of the patients in my practice, it's not that I don't believe that cholesterol can be a problem, but for the vast majority of Americans, insulin resistance and high blood glucose is the issue.
So let's go to the last one because we're running out of time. You had one more you wanted to mention.
The fasting insulin levels.
Go ahead, talk about
that. Okay. So when we do fasting insulin levels, which docs hardly ever do, which I think is quite honestly a more important test than cholesterol, we get a handle on your measure of insulin resistance. And we can measure a fasting insulin level along with a fasting blood glucose simultaneously, and there's a relationship between the two, because if your insulin's a little bit high, it should be pushing down your blood glucose.
Right.
If it's not, it means your organs are resisting insulin. They are not listening to the signal from insulin. Insulin is the key in the lock that pushes that blood glucose into your organs, into your muscles. And if your pancreas is kicking out a lot of insulin, then that means that it's trying to overcome that resistance from your organs. So high insulin means you got insulin resistance, which means there are issues. And I always do a fasting insulin and a fasting blood glucose and calculate an exact level of insulin resistance for my patients. So this is part of putting together a comprehensive metabolic health plan. And, where should the low carb diet be? And where should the intermittent fasting be? And how important is strength training as opposed to cardiovascular training? And, Terry, this is what I've been doing for the last 7 years. And those are the fundamentals. Now, do we add the GLP-1 medications for some patients?
Sure.
Yeah. After we get these lifestyle changes down, we can add those in to get a jump start or to break through a plateau or a stall in weight loss.
And I think on our next podcast, we're going to dig into a little bit more about that topic. So I know we're going to go deeper there.
Right. So before I finish up, you got to let me do the three plugs here.
Well, I was going to do a plug for you.
Okay, go ahead. You go first.
My first plug was going to be, if people people out there listening, and by the way, we're becoming a kind of a popular podcast. People out there listening, and they want to talk to you directly, right?
Yeah.
You're kind of a solo practitioner, a boutique practice. If they reach out, they talk to you.
Yeah.
Right? They're not talking to some staff or anything like that. They're talking to you.
So you can go to the Metabolic MD website, and there's a form there you can fill out, and then you can sign up to do a 20-minute phone consultation with me. I'll be honest with you. I love talking to patients, and even if all they do is a 20-minute consultation, I feel like I can at least set them down to the path of, you know, looking at low carb, considering insulin right. resistance, you know, asking their doc if they've got a high cholesterol level to look at subfraction. So we can talk about all those things in 15 or 20 minutes. But, you know, after I talk to people, a majority then want to do with me what is a 2-week trial before they commit to a longer program. So you can go to my website. You got to live in Ohio, Indiana, Florida, or Arizona, because those are the states that I'm licensed in. I'm not licensed to do these consultations in other states because of the practice of medicine laws. But I'm happy to talk to anybody for 15 or 20 minutes for them to learn more about the type of things we've talked about on this podcast, for me to understand what's going on with their health, and then to talk about potentially working together.
All right. What was the, I know we plugged.
The book, Terry.
The shameless book plug. Yeah. Is it still doing well on Amazon?
It's doing great on Amazon. So the Continuous Glucose Monitor Revolution for non-diabetics. I use these CGMs because they provide so much information to individuals related to their blood sugar physiology. So part of my 2-week trial process is you wear a continuous glucose monitor and see your blood glucose curves and data 24/7. So the Continuous Glucose Monitor Revolution on Amazon is now the best-selling book on CGMs. So a lot of what we've talked about here and a lot of information on the lifestyle changes I recommend is in the book.
So the last plug, I know we touched on a little bit about signing up for a consult, right? Conversation with you. If they just have questions, can they reach out and just ask you questions, sign up for a consultant, ask a question?
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested in seeing if I can help people long term.
Yeah.
But you can just go ahead on the website. You know, we have the Calendly app there. So I have, you know, 15-minute time periods where people can just sign up. You know, I have limited time every week. I usually set aside 5 or 6 hours every week to do these consults with people. And then they can decide if we can help them. But again, you got to live in Ohio, Indiana, Florida, and Arizona to be eligible for that.
Well, in that case, we're going to end this podcast. Now that you've all heard my lab results, I have nothing left to hide. We'll see you again real soon on the Metabolic MD with Dr. Paul Kalazic. This is Terry O'Brien, your producer. I'm out.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Metabolic MD with Dr. Paul Kalazic. Please join us again for the next episode to hear how your metabolic health means everything and to learn tips on how to lose weight and possibly reverse some serious health conditions. This information is not meant to be medical advice. Please seek consultation from your own medical professional.